So basically, in this class, as one of the projects, Barbara Corcoran actually reaches out to the students, and we work in groups to help her evaluate the companies that will be coming up on Shark Tank soon. Welcome to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. Millard Chan and Andrew Moss launched this podcast to give a voice to the countless founders, angel investors, incubators, supporters, and startup events located in San Diego.
Welcome to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew. This is a podcast that we're launching to give a voice to the countless founders, angel investors, incubators, supporters, and startup events located in San Diego. So this is Millard Chan, the guy with the Chinese voice.
And this is Andrew Moss, the guy with the Irish voice.
Hey, how's it going, Andrew? It seems like it's just yesterday that I last saw you.
I know. I'm not too bad. You know, I saw you yesterday at the pre-screen high-tech committee, and we now have a new high-tech chair, Tim Rout. He did a great job presenting the companies, and the new process is really good.
Absolutely. I was really, really impressed because at one point, after one of the presentations, one of the pitches, there were some reservations about the CEO being a first-time CEO. And then Tim Rout just said, well, hold on. I was a first-time CEO, and he's a serial entrepreneur with exits. He said he was a first-time CEO, and everyone's going to have that first time, but it's who you surround yourself in terms of your founding team. That was just so
absolutely.
Spot
I mean,
on.
Yeah, everyone starts somewhere. And yeah, the team that you put yourself around is really important. It's almost more important sometimes than the idea that you come to the table with. So
that's right. Management is really at the high of the list for investors to look at. Interesting thing for the listeners to take note of. Tim Rout started something in the San Diego area called Founders Drinking Club. And so I don't know what it'll turn into sometime later, but at least it's been operating now for less than 6 months. And it's a small circle of strictly founders and co-founders kind of meet and share ideas with each other, men and women, younger, older, just to kind of give each other a support network. And so he's running that along with Ashok Kamal, who's the executive director of Tech Coast Angel San Diego, and Neil Bloom, who's with Hired and is also a co-founder of Portfolium. So hit those people up, listeners, if you want to get involved in the Founders Drinking Club. So shall we turn to today's episode, Andrew?
Absolutely. We've got two great guests on today, both TCA analysts and also doing many other things outside of the TCA. Do you want to introduce them?
Yeah, I am so stoked. So we're joined by Melinda Mindy Nguyen, who is Senior Manager of Business Analytics and Insights at Hologic, which is a large-cap life sciences company. She is also a volunteer analyst at Tech Coast Angel San Diego. Previously, Mindy worked at Sandoz Pharmaceuticals and Merrill Lynch Equity Research and has experience across varied areas of the pharmaceutical industry, including investment valuation, company strategy and analytics, product management, and marketing. Mindy, welcome.
Hi, happy to be here.
Excellent. We're also joined by Michelle Yoshioka Maley, who is an account manager at ScoreStream, which is a communication platform that allows fans to share information around sporting events with their family and friends. That is so cool. I could totally use that. She is also a volunteer analyst at Tech Coast Angel San Diego. Michelle was previously director of programs and operations at EvoNexus, which is San Diego's premier technology incubator, which is where my first startup was incubated. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Awesome.
All right, let's jump right in. Mindy, what can you tell us about how you got involved in due diligence projects for Barbara Corcoran for her Shark Tank investments?
So that was through business school. So I went to Columbia for my executive MBA.
Go Lions.
And so one of the classes I took was this really fantastic entrepreneurship class where we had entrepreneurs come in every week from different levels of maturity. I would say that they range from early startups all the way to quite mature. And so Barbara Corcoran knew this professor very well. So basically, in this class, as one of the projects, Barbara Corcoran actually reaches out to the students, and we work in groups to help her evaluate the companies that will be coming up on Shark Tank soon. So, you know, we get the dossier of the company, we get kind of what the deal terms are that they're asking for, and then we work in groups of three or four and would come out with basically our due diligence and also a proposal of whether or not to take the deal or if you revise the terms. So that's how we started. And then it went so well, she actually offered extra credit courses as well, which just meant doing more work with the companies. And this time we worked with companies she had already invested in and doing some analyses of kind of strategy. So she's invested them with a certain strategy. Where do they go from there? Where do they grow? And then after Columbia, actually, her team reached out again and asked for people in our class to help with additional projects and additional company evaluations. So that's kind of where it's been. Haven't done much recently, but it's been a very fun project to do.
That's so cool because, you know, Shark Tank is a super highly rated program. And so is there like a waiting list to get into that class at business school at Columbia?
Well, so Columbia is actually pretty interesting. And I'm sure other schools and business schools do this as well. But they have kind of a point system. And so you bid on classes. So you start out every year with a certain number of points and you gain more as you go through your program. And you use those points as you see fit. And I think they have tried to make it so you can't game the system too much. But yeah, it's actually pretty interesting. It's a market-based thing. So if you really want a class, you bid low on other classes, save up your points, and throw a lot onto that. And I would say that is a class that was highly bid.
So that's tremendous. That experience must help you so much as an analyst at Techcoast Angels looking at due diligence for deals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so my background is in evaluating companies of a much more mature kind of public level. So for me, it was really interesting because it's just very different what you look at, what you consider, and then also what those companies offer up when you're evaluating them.
Absolutely. So let's bring Michelle in on this. And could you tell us about, you know, I mentioned that you used to work at Evanexis. Could you tell us about the transition from working at, in my view, San Diego's premier technology incubator to your work now at a former Evanexis portfolio company?
Yeah. So I've been with Scorestream for about a year and a half now. So it's been some time. It actually went really fast. But I was at Evanexis for about 4 years. So I was there for a really long time, surrounded by startups. So I don't think it was surprising to anyone that I eventually joined one. I think it's really inspiring to be around so many smart people, all of these new ideas all the time. And it's pretty quick that everyone that works there, it happens pretty quick where you end up really wanting to join one. Because you kind of just, it's such an inspiring place to be around. You really start to love that fast-paced environment. And then envisioning yourself working anywhere not that fast paced is kind of tough. And so it was sort of just a matter of time until I found a team that I wanted to be a part of. And so Derek Owen, who's the founder of Scorestream, CEO and founder, he was on the committee and he was also a mentor to a lot of the startups and myself. He was somebody that I admired a lot. And I knew that if I was going to join a startup, it would be one where I really believed in the team, or it was someone that I felt like I was going to learn a lot from. And I really enjoy working in a startup and kind of in that community. And I knew to continue that work, I would need to get more experience on this side of it and being in a startup. And truly, I learned more in the first like 3 months of being with that startup than I probably did throughout the 4 years of being at Evanexis about startups. I mean, it's just such a different thing being on the other side of it, and more than you can imagine. And I'm really fortunate that it is with an experienced team that has been through multiple startups, and there's just a wealth of knowledge that they have to share. So, I mean, it's been an awesome experience.
So what do you do as account manager over at Scorestream?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny, you know, in startups, titles are almost meaningless in a lot of ways. initially, you know, it's a mobile app and we crowdsource the content. So people are putting in photos, scores, videos. And then we have all of these media partners, local news, TV, national partners, like USA Today, that you leverage that content. And so they use that, whether that's on their website or on air or in a news broadcast. But we have all these partners that use that content. And so initially I was hired to help manage those partners. So bringing on new ones, getting new ones, managing the existing ones, helping them leverage the content we have to get the most out of that partnership. And so that is still a focus, but I've also kind of been roped into our new advertising efforts and our efforts to monetize, which is always an uphill battle. A lot of marketing initiative, just grassroots things to help with user growth, just day to day, I mean, the everyone is constantly focusing on growth in all aspects of the business, users, engagement, partners, time on app, just all of that. And so I think a lot of my job just goes into all those areas, every aspect you could imagine that's not technical in a way, because so much of our team is technical and there's a smaller group of us that are not. And so all of us sort of band together to help with those growth initiatives. So it's hard to say, like, what exactly is your job? It changes, but kind of all the above.
Yeah, I mean, that's a typical startup, though. I mean,
which is what makes it fun.
Exactly. You jump in and do whatever is needed. I majored in sports marketing, actually, up in, up in Oregon. So I can see how big the sports industry is. And a company like yours that you're working at, it's just a perfect example of like what's happening in sports and how little things in sports is not just about the game anymore. Mm-hmm. It's about what's going on outside the game.
It is. And it's even, it's just, you know, from a high school level, which is our sweet spot, there's no real place that people can go in real time to find out what the score is or engage with other fans. And so that was sort of the reason it was built. In addition, news organizations no longer have the budgets or the people to cover local sports. And so kind of the theory of our company is that moving forward, local sports will be crowdsourced because news organizations just don't have the budget to go to every game, to cover every sport. I mean, high school alone, we have, I think, 14 different sports now that we support, all the way down to netball, which a lot of people probably haven't heard of.
I've seen it.
Yeah. So it's,
didn't even
it's
know it was
crazy.
A high school sport.
Yeah. Not necessarily, but in you know, nationally or internationally, netball is big. And so, yeah, it's interesting to watch how the sports industry is evolving, especially with regards to media and how it's covered.
So, Mindy, you're doing business analytics and a little bit of the marketing at a pharmaceutical company. And understanding that you did due diligence projects back in business school, working on some cool projects for Barbara Corcoran, but why did you join the Tech Coast Angels volunteer analyst program?
So that's a really interesting question. So I moved to San Diego about a year, maybe a year and a half ago. Didn't know anyone, didn't know anything about the city, what there is to do, what the environment is. So, you know, I put out some feelers and I think we were actually put in touch through a mutual friend. And so you recommended the analyst program, but when I looked at it, it kind of hit a lot of the boxes or checked a lot of the boxes that I was looking for when I moved here. So one thing is my background is kind of in more mature, larger companies. I really wanted to kind of explore what is the startup, what is the startup environment? What is that like? So just a little bit of departure from what I'd been doing. Another thing is that I absolutely love due diligence. It's one of my favorite things, right? I was a research analyst to start. I don't think you can ever kind of take that out of me. And then, you know, as well, like my background is in pharma, and San Diego is actually, you know, quite immersed in life sciences, but not so much pharma. So for me, I just wanted to kind of know, well, what else is out there in terms of the life science, right? Like biotech scene, diagnostics, things like that. These are things I'm completely unfamiliar with. And I'd get to get a great view of it through TCA.
And that's so interesting. To the untrained eye, people think life sciences and they think pharma, medical devices, diagnostics, healthcare IT. It's kind of all the same thing, but it's vastly different in terms of the product development cycles and you know, what people look at. I remember when I was interviewing for people to join the team back when I was at Illumina, people would come in and talk about or ask about the 10 or 15 year plan. And I automatically knew they weren't right for the job because their background was pharma, which is a longer term than say a 3 year for say a device company. So interesting.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I mean, I would say even between pharma and biotech, there's just so many differences in how people in those industries view the industry, how they view development, strategy. I mean, I just think that they're the most adjacent in healthcare and they're two different worlds.
That's right. So you wanted to kind of get acclimated to what the startup scene was like, which is one of the reasons why you wanted to join the TCA Volunteer Analyst Program. And you wanted to leverage your background of having done due diligence actually at a very interesting level with, you know, through Shark Tank. Michelle, you had actually come at the nexus of, or the Evo nexus of startups. And then you went and joined a startup. So what was your motivation to join the
Yeah. So, you know, one of my, I guess, even hesitations with leaving Evonexus was how much fun it is to be exposed to not just one company, but 30 companies or 40 companies. And so there was a part of me that didn't want to lose not only the skills that I had gained there, but just the joy I have in learning about a lot of different startups. And I wanted to stay involved in the community and kind of find a way to give back however I could using some of those skills that I now had. Also, the diligence at the Evonexus level is a little lighter than TCA. And so I wanted to kind of get more hands-on with really deep due diligence and where you really dive into the very small details of a company. And so I learned about the TCA. Well, I knew about the TCA Analyst Program. And so I was like, I think this would be a great place to kind of volunteer some time and in return learn a lot from it. And, you know, my favorite part of the due diligence or even just being at Evonexus was the due diligence, you know, getting to like learn about each company and then do extra research to get a sense of what that industry is like or that landscape, that competitive landscape, and just learn about all the innovations in those different spaces. And so TCA has given me the opportunity to continue doing that. And I love it. I mean, my favorite part of TCA is when we get into the deep diligence, not just the pitches. That part's cool, but I love the deep due diligence part.
And I think also the conversations that come out of it, right? Yeah. Because I think you can always look at a company in the news and kind of make, you know, your own assumptions. But I think the best part is we sit in meetings and we learn about these companies. We hear the Q&A and then we, you know, meet up afterwards and kind of throw out our theses about where we think it's going.
Just like geek out on our like
exactly.
That's so funny. Just leading into the next thing here. I mean, you've seen both sides of the table working for a startup and also being an analyst here at TCA. What kind of observations have you noticed between the interactions between entrepreneurs and angel investors that you could kind of talk about?
Yeah. So I think, you know, one of them, there's several interesting things. One thing is a referral in any sense of the word can go a long way. This was an interesting thing to me just because, you know, whether that's a referral from another, you know, how the company got here, if that was a referral in, that gives it a lot of credibility. If there's somebody in the room that endorses it, that thinks that knows more about this space and thinks it's interesting, that goes a long way. So not to call it herd mentality, but like it is interesting how much, you know, no one can really guess how successful a startup is going to be, no matter how experienced you are, right? I mean, so there's so many factors that go into it. You use your knowledge, you use your experience to look for the red flags and kind of evaluate, but in the end, you don't know. And so I think no matter how smart an investor is or how independent they are, they still are influenced by the people around them. And I just found that to be an interesting concept. You know, it's a referral or it's an endorsement, you know, just the opinions of others kind of matters. And it was just an interesting observation I made.
Yeah, you're
good
right
or
about
bad.
The herd mentality because... the challenge is sometimes if a founder is pitching and there's one person in the audience, one of the investors, just say something strongly negative, and they feel so strongly about it. It's amazing how sometimes the group gravitates towards that
right.
thinking.
I've also seen it the other way though, where the group might be feeling not necessarily just very neutral about something, but then an influential member might say something that says an endorsement for the company and that kind of turns it the other way. So it's an interesting sort of balance to strike.
And the reason though, I think it's particularly interesting with TCA is that there's a wide breadth of knowledge in this room. There's a lot of different backgrounds of people. And so in most cases you have someone who is knowledgeable about the industry in some way or whatever the person's doing. And so when that person's not there, people want to know what that person thinks. And so it's just interesting from a group angel investor perspective.
There's definitely a smart money element to, I think. You can definitely see after a few iterations of TCA meetings who those influential people are. And it's amazing. It's amazing to see how much they can kind of guide that entire process for a company.
I'd also say, and you'll probably have something to say about this or agree with it, but I think another interesting thing is the difference between somebody who is prepared for a pitch, an entrepreneur who is prepared or experienced even.
Yeah.
Not necessarily experienced, actually. I'd say just prepared. The difference between how that meeting goes and the difference between someone who just wasn't prepared. I mean, the response from the investors is night and day, most usually anyways.
I think the variety on both sides is, I mean, you've already said this, but that's exactly what I think I found the most interesting is just the variety of backgrounds of the TCA members, and then the variety of the companies that are coming in, and the fact that those are kind of meshing to create investments. I mean, the fact that a high tech deal could come in and then someone with a deep biotech experience may invest in that, right? Or vice versa. You know, knowing nothing about biotech, but trusting the other members of TCA. I mean, I find that very, very interesting, right? There's a level of kind of trust and community in order to make these deals happen, right?
So have you observed any differences between this angel group as compared to, say, what you saw with Barbara Corcoran or others in Shark Tank or back at business school when you're doing due diligence?
So I would say that it's, you know, and I think I can also compare it a little bit to, you know, when I worked at a bank. But I think, so angel investors, I think, are very similar to what I saw with Shark Tank a little bit, in that it is an individual's experiences, right? And then also leveraging other people's expertise where possible to make these conclusions. But they also, in some way, like, they have, just by nature of what this is, a little bit less information, right? Because if you're an investor in a specific industry, you will know everything about that inside and out. But with startups, it's very fascinating because you can know almost nothing about it, because, you know, startups are trying to solve problems that in areas that don't exist yet, or, you know, so it's pretty interesting from that respect, where I think, not that there's a lot more faith, but, you know, there's less direct knowledge or experience. And so it really falls back on kind of more your experience of, I think, intuition or seeing patterns across industries or, you know, different areas. I would say that it's pretty similar across all of these. It's just, it depends, like, what the main difference is, just what people ask about and what they look at, right? I think that the angel investors, or maybe Shark Tank, I think that, again, it kind of falls a little bit more on those personal idiosyncrasies of the investor, because it's their own money, right? So, you know, to your point, Michelle, about preparation, someone's not prepared, sometimes that can, you know, that's a pain point for someone who's seen this too many times, or, you know, they have something about email and a company doesn't email back on time, right? Things like that. And then that deal may not move forward.
So that's something I want to talk about, because everything is available on the web today. YouTube videos, pitch decks of the best pitches out there, all sorts of techniques on how to talk to investors. And yet, time after time, without fail, week after week, we see pitches come in that are either fall flat or a variety of, like, red flags. Dead eyes, speak too fast, not organized. And, you know, it just goes to show you human nature.
Absolutely. I mean, even another thing that you didn't mention there was office hours for even going and talk to angel investors, and they could get their opinion of people they will be pitching to. These options are available to entrepreneurs if they want to seek it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So now that you've had a time, and Michelle, more than Mindy, kind of a broad view of the startup ecosystem in the San Diego region, what's, and you know, chime in, both of you, what's your assessment of the strengths and then also areas for improvement?
Yeah. So this is always a fun topic, right? I mean, there's always the typical complaints about lack of capital or lack of mentors or whatever. And we've kind of talked about this briefly before it started, but I really tend to lean towards the greatest weakness is fragmentation. I mean, it is just really fragmented, almost from a geographical standpoint. I mean, it's not a huge city, but then it is. People in North County don't always mingle with people downtown, and people in Serrano Valley may not get anywhere. And so, you know, I think from a opportunity perspective, and I think that's what's great about this podcast, is if people communicated more, if all the incubators, accelerators, organizations, investment groups, individuals, entrepreneurs, if everyone had some line of communication or were in touch more, I think we'd start to see there is a lot of funding going on. There are a lot of investments being made. There's a lot of great mentors and people. The mentor that you are looking for is probably right here in San Diego, or one referral away. It's just, it is fragmented, and it's easy to kind of stay at your desk or stay in your bubble, and you don't get out there and you don't realize that there is a lot to be benefited from. And San Diego is great. There's a lot of talent here. And so there's always ways to improve. Capital is an issue, always going to be, I think. And I think there's a lot of great mentors, but they don't always have time, right? There's always sort of a challenge. And I think for San Diego, it's on the right path. I've seen the amount of growth I saw in the last 2 years of being at Evonexus compared to the first two was huge, just in steps towards defragmenting and people kind of trying to come together. And so I think there's a lot of good people trying to do good things to bring the community together. And it's just a matter of time before we'll start to see that happen. And things like what Mike Krenn's doing at SDVG to try to bring more of the Bay Area Silicon Valley money here or bring more of us there. Steps like that, people doing big initiatives like that, I think are going to go a long way. So there's the typical weaknesses, the lack of funding and the mentorship, but I think it's all going in the right direction right now, would be my opinion.
Yeah, oftentimes founders either reinvent the wheel or spin their wheels because they're going to the wrong resources at the wrong time. And so part of the hope for this podcast is to highlight all the various resources, whether it's high-tech software, life sciences around town, and then, you know, allowing people or enabling people the ability to kind of, you know, go to the right place for help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the less time people spend trying to find the resources, the better. If they can find it all in one place, that would be, right. I guess, the dream, you could
yes,
say.
Yes, absolutely. I would agree.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said to the limited extent that I've only been here about a year and a half. But one of the things that I really like, I think, about San Diego, or there are a lot of events, and I almost would say that they're manageable because, you know, if you live in New York or anywhere else, there's probably lots of events, but there's almost too many, and which one's the right one to go to, things like that. I think San Diego actually has quite a manageable kind of size of an ecosystem right now. If you wanted to get into it, it is just a matter of knowing where to look. One of the other things that I've found kind of unique here is that San Diego is very focused on San Diego, I think, for better and for worse, right? Because I think for better, things are manageable. Everyone does know each other. So it's kind of, once you get your foot in the door, it's kind of easy to meet more people, learn about new opportunities. But on the flip side, you know, if you aren't from San Diego, or if San Diego is trying to attract people from outside, they don't know anything because, you know, San Diego kind of stays in its little bubble and incubating within that, right?
Absolutely. And so, you know, I think we could all chime in with some tips on, if you're a newcomer to the San Diego region, how do you get plugged in to the startup ecosystem if that's what you want to do, whether to as a founder or as an investor? One of the best things around town is San Diego Startup Week. It's the premier meeting and conference for the startup ecosystem. You can go and attend a conference, sign up to volunteer to help out, speak on a panel. Just all sorts of myriad of things that you can do to kind of help get plugged in. That's just one example.
Yeah, I mean, as you guys mentioned earlier, the San Diego Venture Group, I mean, they have the monthly morning meetings and they have a great panel, and it sort of covers a range of topics, and you can meet and network there. And I think it's an invaluable sort of place to go to get some information about, especially if you're new here in San Diego.
Yeah, I mean, I think Startup Week is one of the best, but also the organization behind it, Startup San Diego, which actually just became a nonprofit. So that was really exciting. And I've been helping volunteer with them since the beginning, really, a little bit less involved in the last year being in North County. but, you know, for the first few years, I mean, the first Startup Week was a few hundred people and now it's huge. And so, but I think what is, to your point, good and bad about San Diego is that it's very focused on San Diego, and the community is so willing to help. And so if you go to any of those events, if you go to an SDVG event, if you go to a Startup Week event, or one of the coffee meetups, if you go to anything, you're going to meet somebody who's willing to give you a couple of things about what the ecosystem is like, or where you might be able to ask somebody for what you're looking for. And so granted, there's not one central place, and that would be awesome. I hope somebody kind of works on that. But you can find it, and people are really willing to help point you in the right direction.
One thing that I used when I got here, and I still use, which I find very useful, is this Thomson Reuters newsletter that comes out. I want to say it comes out about monthly, and what it does is it actually aggregates a lot of the events that are happening in San Diego. Mm-hmm. So it has SDVG on there. It has Biocom. I mean, it has tons of stuff.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I used to submit events through that at Evonexus just to get publicity, but I had no idea who, I mean, how did you just subscribe to that?
I think I met someone actually at a TCA event who was an affiliate with TCA actually. And then I asked him how he had learned about this event. And he said, well, you know, there's this newsletter. And then he forwarded it to me and I just subscribed.
Yeah. So that's an awesome one. And then there's a Startup Digest too that sends out all the events. I want to say that Leslie Fleshock from Greek Geek Girl runs that one, maybe with Brant Cooper. So there's a few kind of these digests that you can subscribe to and hear about events.
And as we're talking about events outside of San Diego, I mean, for your personal or professional lives, what people do you kind of reach out to get advice from, or just in general to talk to get more motivated or inspired?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't have a particular method of it, but just over time, sort of the network that I've built, which wasn't hard to build. I mean, like I said, everyone in San Diego is really helpful and it's really easy to start getting to know people. People are always willing to meet up for coffee or lunch or just to chat. And so I've sort of built a network and I have different people I go to depending on the need. And then there's also the Startup San Diego Slack channel, which is actually super helpful. I found anyways, I think you guys are on it probably.
I am.
And you know, I'm not always actively participating, but you can kind of shout out a need and somebody will come to help if they can. And it's sort of interesting just to see what news flows through there and what people are talking about. And I would say if you're interested, that's a great virtual place to join and get involved. And then from there, you can probably figure out where to go next. But I do leverage that just to keep in touch with people or if I need something. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I think, you know, I kind of leverage existing networks I had and try to find people within that. So to build a new one out here in San Diego. So one thing is I'm pretty active in my alumni association. So, you know, college and business school, I mean, they're really fun. But then I think one of the great things about that is that you always know someone who knows someone wherever you go. So actually, again, like Mill, that's how we got put in touch, right? Through the Columbia connection. And I think that's been really helpful because especially if you're someone who feels a little bit intimidated about just meeting a lot of new people and just talking to them about not knowing anything, right? It's a difficult conversation sometimes to start. And then I think it removes that pressure a little bit if it's through a connection you kind of know or through, you know a friend very well and he knows someone. And I think it just kind of reduces that level of like, you know, awkwardness that I think you can feel when you're just reaching out to people.
Okay. So let's do a compare and contrast and give some real, get real for advice for the listeners. So Michelle, you come from the perspective of being an insider. I know I go to a lot of events and since people know you from EvoNexus, you can just stand there. People come up to you and talk to you because you're a known person. Mindy, you're new to town, been here for like less than a year and a half, and you go to a lot of these meetings, you don't know a lot of people. And so what I would love to hear from both of you is if you're new to town, how do you actually go and approach and talk to people at these type of meetings or meetups or cocktails? And then also, if you're a person that's established in town, how do you make it comfortable for new people to talk to you and help them get acclimated to the community?
I go first. You go first. So I guess being new, I mean, again, like it's funny because we've been talking about network a lot, but I actually hate networking. At least what it's kind of become, sort of that business sense. So a lot of it for me is, you know, not having expectations of going somewhere and necessarily forging a connection right away. It's almost dipping your toe in the water. So I try to find events that I think I would be interested in. And so again, TCA was an example. And I would go to a general membership meeting and not know anyone besides maybe the analyst, right? And I think the goal for those is just hang out and be a fly on the wall for a while. Just like kind of go and, you know, if you're uncomfortable, you don't have to talk to people right away, which I know sounds a little bit, maybe I'm a little bit more awkward, but, you know, like over time, people will get more familiar with you. There's probably also people in the same boat. And then, you know, you're going to start to meet people just through conversation doing that where you click, right? Because I think a lot of it is that you go to this room, you don't know anybody, and then maybe you talk to a few people and that doesn't click or you don't, you know, you just don't know enough. And then over time you make one connection and then that connection leads to more because, you know, they kind of lead to more people that you resonate with, or, you know, you feel more comfortable about asking more things.
I totally agree with that. It's kind of like the tortoise and the hare story. It's organically growing your connections in the community. I've actually been to meetings where we're just kicking off a meeting and there's one guy says, hold on, can we just hand out business cards first before we get into the meat of things? And I'm sitting there saying, are you kidding me, dude? And the guy would have the gall to actually get up after he said that, walk around the room and hand out his business cards. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
So I truly like the organic way of growing your
yeah, I think it just feels like a little bit more genuine from my point. Yeah. Like, I mean, not that other people who network aren't being genuine, but for me, you know, just feeling like I'm talking to someone only because I want something out of them, it's hard for me to even start that conversation. Right. So I think it's
puts pressure on you too, if you need to get something out of it immediately.
Right. Exactly. And it just kind of puts a weird tone in your head, which I think can sometimes translate as you're talking to that person. So for me, it's a lot of just get really comfortable with the situation and then start reaching out once you feel comfortable.
Yeah. I would say, so obviously I had to start somewhere, right? And so I do remember walking into events and not knowing anyone. And what's interesting is even just being a little bit less involved in this past year, when I go to events, I don't know nearly as many people as I used to know. That kind of is a testament to how quickly the community is growing, which is great. It's awesome. So when I first started, definitely uncomfortable. I mean, you would go to events and it's kind of intimidating to just talk to people. You know, one tip is to bring a friend, just somebody that is kind of wants to do the same thing with you. And then you feel less awkward in those moments of silence where you don't have anyone to talk to. And then you also feel a little bit more confident going with somebody to introduce yourself. And something as simple as like, hey, I'm new here, I'm Michelle, and just introduce yourself will go a long way. It opens up a big conversation and you can kind of, the person's likely to ask what you do or what you're doing here, or, you know, what you're looking to do. And you can kind of get a conversation started right there around whatever it is you're interested in. And it might lead to, like you've said, many more connections or introductions. And so, although scary, if you can kind of get up the nerve to just introduce yourself to one person and just say, hey, I'm new, I think that'll go a long way. And then secondly, if I was starting out all over somewhere new, I would go to more of the social events rather than topic specific. So just things like happy hours or things where it's meant to be social, because the expectation is that people are there to get to know other people. And so it makes it a little bit more warmer of a welcome from the start. So those would probably, was that the question? No, it's a question,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was. It absolutely was.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you. I mean, everyone goes to these sort of social events and networking events with one common interest, to meet new people. So yes, you might feel awkward, but the person you're probably talking to also feels the same
exactly.
way. So you're better just to put yourself out there and just say hi.
Come prepared with like a few things to talk about. I mean, chargers right now is a great one, right?
Topical. Yeah,
very topical. Come with like something sort of fun and non-related, and then know what you're potentially looking for. And I think if you're a little prepared, you have a few things to fall back on. And then that makes the conversation icebreaker a little bit easier.
All right. Kind of one other thing I want to talk about here is, I mean, you've seen both sides again, and you've seen a lot of pitches here. And what kind of advice could you give? Like maybe three things that you could give to an entrepreneur who's about to come in to pitch to TCA. Like what could they do to set them up for best success possible?
So first I would say, do your research. So know your audience, know who you're pitching to. And like you've said, if you can take advantage of any resource to put you in touch with someone ahead of time or any of the resources about pitching, take advantage of those, like really do your research. Second, I would say test out your pitch on someone who's unfamiliar with what you do, someone completely unfamiliar with, what you do, because the thing about TCA is it is a very general audience. It's a wide range of people. And so you want to appeal to the midline, is my opinion. I think if you can appeal to the midline, that will get people who may not know about your industry a little interested. And it also has the opportunity to get people who very much know it interested, because the goal is just to move forward. And so the first one doesn't have to answer every question. And then the third one would be less is probably more. You don't always have to jam every piece of text onto your slide or say every single thing about what you do. So succinct and less is sometimes more.
That's great. That's great advice.
For me, I think the first one would be, you've got to get all that low hanging fruit. And by that, it kind of touches on what we talked about earlier, but you know, you have to maintain this level of professionalism because I think it's just that first bar you have to get over. It's the one thing that can, you know, it doesn't matter how good your company is, how good your product or service is. Like if you can't put together a deck, you can't talk to people, you can't communicate with the people who are trying to give you money and you're asking them for money, right? That's the first thing. And there's hundreds of companies and people out there that can do that. So you have to meet that bare minimum, I think. I don't know if that's one or two, but the third thing I think also is, it's a lot about kind of ego. And I think this is one of the things that always comes up when I see companies that have a lot going for them, but then they also don't go that far. And it's always think about what you're missing and what you don't know, right? Because I think even being open about that or just showing that you think about that can go a long way to investors. What I think sometimes I see where I think it's going wrong is a company may know a lot about the product or, you know, they've built something from the ground up, but they haven't really thought about every other aspect outside of just that, right? And so they don't see risks that are obvious to investors who've been around longer, things like that. So I think it's a lot of once you have your entrepreneur hat, but you also need to put on like, what is that investor hat? What is a customer hat? Like, what are all these hats? And some people do it well and some people don't, right?
So does that remind you of something that we saw recently at a pitch, Andrew? It's exactly that. Sometimes you can't be the sole founder. I guess you could be the sole founder, but if you are a sole founder, then surround yourself with good mentors and advisors so that, you know, not everyone is just, you know, drinking from the same, you know, soda tap. And to kind of my thinking is as a founder myself is to be more critical on yourself from every possible angle than anybody else could be so that you're over prepared.
Exactly.
For these pitches.
I think, you know, you want to have heard almost every question out there before you go into these pitch meetings, because then you know you'll be prepared. And then, you know, whether or not those critiques are well-founded or not, you may hear them anyways. So just knowing how to react to them and not be defensive, or to just have a great response as to why you would address something, I think goes a long way towards reassuring investors.
Yeah, that's kind of to your point about ego, right? I mean, you're so passionate about what you're building as an entrepreneur and or as a founder. It sometimes is painful to get some of those criticisms, but I think sometimes you can, rather than take it as a criticism, consider interest. Like somebody's asking you a question because they want to know more. Don't feel like you have to defend your idea, to your point, but rather inform the person of your opinion on it and, you know, humility over arrogance.
Yeah.
Excellent. As we wind down the episode, Michelle, how can people reach out to you?
LinkedIn's probably the best. You can find me there, or my email is also fine, michelle@scorestream.com. I'm pretty responsive. I'm happy to meet anyone.
Excellent. Mindy?
I would also say LinkedIn. I'm a bit of a Luddite, so which is a recurring joke, right? I don't have much social media. But yeah, LinkedIn is probably the best way, and I'd be on there as Melinda. So.
Excellent. Thank you, Michelle and Mindy, for joining us on Startup Talk.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us.
That concludes another episode of Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew.
Let's get started.
Hey, folks, please subscribe to Startup Talk with Millard and Andrew on iTunes and rate and review us. It helps other people find this podcast. This episode was produced by Millard Chan and Andrew Moss. Our sound editor is Lee Liang. Additional voices from Mindy Nguyen. Our theme music is Good Times by Poddington Bear from soundofpicture.com. Our podcast Sherpa is Charles Wilchett.